several decades of social, political, and cultural commentary in the form of collages. That is the Cardboard Jungle series, coming right up. Ears on Art, a segment of the program Issues and Ideas, is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and Monterey counties on California's Central Coast. Today, co-host Krista Hewitt and I, Stephen DeLuque, continue our conversation with Rick Vanini, a ceramic artist, painter, and collage artist who is preparing to release a three-volume set of his collage works titled The Cardboard Jungle Series. Each of the volumes spans a specific period of time and reflects on the stories and issues of each time period. Rick, with the assistance of his wife Kathy, have distilled thousands of works to the images contained in the series. Krista and I now join Rick and Kathy at their home in Atascadero.
When I first started this Cardboard Jungle series, I was living in Monterey in a house with my brother, and we had some roommates, and I used to have my studio out in the garage, and occasionally I'd make these little cardboard things, I guess collages, and I would hang them on their door to tease them, because it was either about sports teams or their political views or whatever. They were like these little jokes that I would leave on their door. You know, after they were unceremoniously ripped down, I started collecting them in a box. After about a year of this, was like, wow, I got a lot of these things, you know, and I laid them all out. Just happened to be during a time where there were a few people over at the house, and they said, Dad, these things are fantastic. They're hilarious. It was at that point where I said, you know, maybe I should do something with these. If I just cleaned them up a little bit, as far as the care that I put into making them and stuff, maybe I could do something with them. So I always say what started as, it's usually the opposite of what happens. What starts off serious winds up becoming a joke. This started as a joke and wound up becoming serious. So 1,500 of them later, I'm getting ready to publish them in book form. I'm cutting them down into three volumes because they represent three pretty distinct areas. I took breaks in between each book, sometimes like 5 or 6 years, sometimes two or three or whatever. They really represent pretty much a slice of America for the last 25 years. I'd like to say that they're a little bit like life. There's, you know, humor, there's some sadness in there, there's questioning, there's anger, you know, there's everything. It covers everything that a person would experience living in this country for the last 25 years.
When we were looking at the work before we started this conversation, I was going, okay, what do I even remember of the 80s in terms of the specifics? So I imagine that you give us all a good challenge with that history that we are having to acknowledge is our history, whether we remember it in specifics or not.
Well, to a degree, I don't get too obscure. I tend to stick to stories that were pretty big, the Gulf War, things like that. And I throw in a good dose of humor, though, and because I wanted to give a message, but I didn't want it to be a slap across the face. I wanted it to be more of an elbow in the ribs, like, come on. So there are a lot of pieces that really point to our hubris, point to our fascination with bizarre things, our obsession with pop culture, and things like that. My good friend Jay Udall said that it's like looking at a slideshow presented by an artist of the last 25 years, but kind of with a twist that only you could do. You could look at the covers right there. I have Kim Jong-il floating away in a hot air balloon, shaking his fist at people. I have cars being picked up by UFOs. I have Donald Trump trying to sell a plate of cookies. I mean, there's John Kerry in a tomato, kind of a nod to his Heinz fortune. We have George Bush and Johnny Cash, Madonna, Picasso, they're all there. It's unique in the way that it's arranged as far as the collage goes. There's not a lot of stuff out there like this. without that type of madness going on.
They're very complex. Do you come up with the concept first, or do you just start collecting images and then work it through?
That's a good question. I collect images. I have my friends save magazines for me, and I go through them like once every 6 months and just tear out pages. Yes, I save images. I'm an image collector is the best way that I could describe it. Old books, I get maps. I use kid stickers. I use anything that can help me do what I want to do. But one of the main things I always try to do is mix it up. I want the work to be, what's the word I'm looking for? I want people to really feel the work and make them think. I don't want these to be trivial, fun pictures to look at. I want there to be a message behind all of them. And for the most part, there is. Whether the message is a simple message or a very serious message, I want them to be dynamic in the sense that somebody would not be able to take their eyes off them. Somebody would instantly see what I'm talking about. I wanted them to be spontaneous. And I wanted to represent the fact that I'm an American artist that has become slightly disillusioned with my country. So there's going to be a lot of political statements in there that I think, a lot of social injustices that I address, at least that I consider social injustices, extremism. I want these pictures to almost be like a mixture of, if it's conceivable, a Goya-like Posada mixed with a little bit of the Big Lebowski, this humorous side of me. But I wanted to make serious social statements with these pieces, because you can't do that with an abstract painting, and you can't do that with a seascape or anything like that. You have to really move to collage, unless you're an extremely good painter and you want to paint these type of things. Well, I'm a natural collage artist, and I just decided to do them. These are the covers that have been unedited. You see in this first one that Mickey Mantle is hitting a ball, and it's knocking the columns down. We see in the second one that the ball is continuing through the sky. And when we go to the third one, we see the ball has bounced off Steve Martin's head. So you see there's conceptual continuity throughout the entire series, even on the covers. They're all moving towards this city. This is like a parade, a soft parade, if you will, of our times and culture.
How did you happen to choose Steve Martin?
I figure if anyone would allow me to do it, it would be Steve Martin. God bless him.
Stephen is studying.
Yes, I am.
Carefully.
It's a fascinating mixture of personalities. A lot of political figures, a lot of entertainment figures, a lot of very bizarre figures like Sarah Palin.
I have a vision for a show planned for a gallery to where I have pretty much all of them going down along a wall. I would challenge viewers at the opening of the show to be able to not laugh. And I don't think anyone would be able to do it. There's a lot of comedy in there, and there's a lot of serious stuff.
Certainly in the last few months, we have been bombarded with a whole new social unrest, if that's a generic term I can use. People back out on the streets. As you think about the most contemporary stories that you could be dealing with, do you have images of how you might represent those, or do you find yourself thinking about ways that you have dealt with some of those similar ideas in the past?
Yes, I do. There are several pieces in this series that are centered on that civil unrest that we've seen, the problems with police brutality, the militarization of our police force after 9/11, the stripping of habeas corpus, the Patriot Acts 1 and 2. All these things are represented in the cardboard jungle because they all represent attacks on our freedom. You know, it saddens me when I see that stuff, because I know as a country, we're better than that. So yes, as an artist, it's almost your duty to comment on it, particularly in this type of stuff.
A quick announcement. You are tuned in to the program Ears on Art, produced at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. We are enjoying a conversation with artist Rick Vanini, who is about to release a 3-volume set of images of his collage works titled The Cardboard Jungle Series. Here is Rick describing one of the works.
Here's a piece right here, and it kind of represents what I'm thinking, and that is a family, probably from our generation, the 50s, running in horror, and it's commenting on the fact that they feel that our country has gone berserk. Well, the bullet over in the corner of the flag represents our budget and how much of our budget goes to the military. This piece right here is Abraham Lincoln. It's a famous photograph of Abraham Lincoln that I've altered. Was a picture of him sitting down, and I've altered it to make him standing up. And he's reflective there in a night sky. And he's pondering about the State of the Union, I guess. This piece right here, entitled Chinese Avalanche, is a child that is being dumped on by all the items that we import. They're collapsing on him in a pile, all the things we really don't need. This is a piece that probably comments on our hubris and over-commercialism. This is a piece called Amorous Annie. This is a B-52 bomber that I've repurposed to bomb people with good tidings, love.
In the form of hearts.
In the form of little hearts, yeah. This is a funny piece. This is America's new secret weapon. Now that we're exporting our junk food to China and all these other countries, these are what appear to be intercontinental ballistic missiles, but they're actually hamburgers taking off from their silos.
A little while ago, you made the comment about the response that you're having is often one of feeling that as a nation, as people, we could be doing better. That's an interesting challenge, I think, to try to help convey that. What sorts of ways are you thinking about, or have you thought about?
Well, you know, any way I can, really, to help people think about some of the things we do. You know, sometimes when people see stuff rather than hear it, it makes them think. I have a piece that's entitled, Do We Really Need These Products? And what it is I've gone through a novelty catalog, and I've pulled out these things that are just like, what? There's actually a factory that makes these things. They actually use energy to create these things. And you think to yourself, what's going on in the world? Why aren't we focusing more on things that we need? Why are we so trivial? And why does it take so incredibly long for humans to learn from our mistakes? It's always something that fascinates me.
Absolutely. I imagine that the catalog was filled with 100 more that you chose not to choose.
There's like a farting Santa. Do we need a farting Santa? I think not. You know, maybe one, but I don't know. We need a factory that cranks them out. These things require energy to make. Water is finite. If they're using water to make these things, that's already a big no-no. It was just me letting the world know that, hey, you know, sometimes we just get goofy, you know?
There's that type of energy. There's also the mental energy. Somebody had to decide that something like this was worth the doing. Here, that is a set of giggling pills. Okay.
I can't imagine what went through that person's mind, thinking that, you know, that people that required to take pills maybe daily for medication would need giggling pills on their couch. It's, to me, frankly, it's some of that stuff is, you know, I just want to also say that when people come to me and say, well, you know, I found that offensive, I always point to that piece and it always calms them right down.
I did a series of paintings that included a little stuffed animal that I named Monkey Bunny. And it's this little blue monkey with fuzzy rabbit ears on it. And I actually came to it because it arrived in my father-in-law's Easter basket one year. And I thought, yes, nothing screams Easter to me like a blue monkey with rabbit ears. And I thought, somebody had to sit down and think this up.
Absolutely.
And what was that process?
Yeah, well, it's a scary process. And my whole thing is that we need to stop thinking about stuff like this and really start considering other things that are more pressing and more important, particularly some of these social issues that we're facing today.
I can hear somebody arguing, well, you're talking about the whole creative process and you started talking about putting peanut butter on a ceramic piece and putting it in the kiln to see what would happen. How do we differentiate the difference?
That's a valid question. However, I would point to a question of taste, perhaps.
I'm not sure it's a valid question. It's just one that I'm sure is being asked.
Yeah, I would say it has something has to do with maybe a matter of taste and where our mental level has dropped to. Most of the things center on body functions. So it's a level of taste. It may go back to the 70s, the flush heard around the world. First time America heard a toilet flush on TV. It was Archie Bunker.
I think there's also a difference because the peanut butter on the ceramic piece was a learning process. And this, to me, is just crass consumerism. That's basically the difference to me.
The question was about the creativity aspect, and you're right. They're trying to sell you something that you don't need, that they think it's funny, and they hope that you will.
Well, certainly in my asking that question, we're not really big on censorship. So how do we help change the tide? How do we make those shifts? I imagine if we had a quick answer, we'd all be in a different place.
I think we'd all be probably rich. One of the things that I would point to is probably goes back to education, whether they get a full view of the world, other cultures, other civilizations, the depth of their knowledge of humor, of everything. Most people don't find Shakespeare jokes funny unless they're a real Shakespeare freak and they can get it. I mean, jokes will fly by people. So things change as society goes on as to what's funny and what's not. But when I go through these catalogs and I see some of this stuff, it just reminds me on how far we've dipped in that area and probably where we need to be. So I'll comment on it and I'll hold people accountable. I mean, who needs that stuff, really?
Good question.
I don't think it's a matter of need. My question is, why would you want it?
I comment on that in the Cardboard Jungle. A lot of things that happen in the news kind of gets overlooked and kind of gets passed over sometimes. Just off the top of my head, 2 or 3 months ago, somebody bought a Renoir at a garage sale for $6. People will remember that, you know? It doesn't happen every day. So I don't just comment on the negative in the Cardboard Jungle. There's a lot of positive things, too. Frank Zappa is one of my big heroes, and he used to ask the question, you know, can you put humor in music? Well, you can. Mozart did. He did. Other people have. And so I'm asking the question, can you put humor in art and still have a message? And I think you can.
One of the local artists, Mark Bryan, is a painter, and he does that. His messages are extremely critical and thought-provoking, but the imagery is phenomenally humorous, and the way he juxtaposes everything. He's a friend of mine, and we always used to compare our styles of painting, and I said, well, Mark, you tickle your people to get the message across, and I hit them over the head with a sledgehammer.
I've been accused of that. I'm not opposed to that at all. My main thing is to make people think, consider, walk away, hopefully ultimately enlightened about some of the things that our society should address, really. This piece right here is entitled December 31st, 11:59 p.m. And it shows a little baby. He's holding his hands and he's staring into your face. And he's saying to you, we spoke in November and again in early December, and now I ask you, have you finally considered my future? I had a woman look at one of these pieces and say, how dare you drag a baby into this? What do you say to something like that? You go, well, that's the whole point of the piece. The baby is worried about its future. Aren't you? So some of these pieces are very direct, very self-explanatory, and you can't walk away thinking anything else. I was doing a study about the images that I use, and I was concerned. I read a study. The average person looks at a picture in a magazine, an advertisement, for 2.3 seconds before he discards it. Now, if I can get somebody to look a little bit longer at that same image with some message behind it, I think I've been successful.
The important part of the imagery is the juxtaposition of the various individual pieces that you put together. I mean, it's not just the singular central image that's the question. It's everything that's about it and everything behind it that's causing that conflict and that question. And that, to me, is the important message. It's not just the image.
I've been thinking for a while, as we've been talking about just that role that humor really can play when people just take something and turn it on its head. And cartoon that's made its way to a greeting card by now, and so whether it started there, I don't know, but has two, I think they're just cartoonish dinosaurs, but they're on the shore watching the ark take off. And the caption is, oh, it was this Wednesday? Like the whole world gets turned upside down all of a sudden. I remember a Far Side one where they were doing a rain dance, but there are all these egg beaters that are falling from the sky. And the caption was, oh, it was two steps to the left and one to the right.
I have a piece in the Cardboard Jungle. It's called Rookie Sorcerers. And there's these three sorcerers standing around, and they're trying to conjure something. And one of them is yelling at the other, you idiot, you've summoned an angry bear. And this bear has just appeared out of nowhere and is preparing to maul them. So, yes. And I have another piece, some cloaked figures standing around with a UFO taking off in the background. And one of the cloaked figures is saying to the other cloaked figure, tell me somebody wrote some of this stuff down.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, our mind.
Absolutely.
When we hope that it works. So, the books are coming out, or they're out already. What's the sequence on that?
The books are going to be out within the next maybe month, I would say. We were put off a little bit. We had an emergency. The holidays caught us. One of my writers has gone slightly AWOL. But we're going to put it together, and it's going to be amazing. It's a three-volume set. I think there's probably how many images in each book, honey? Like 60 or 70
60
images.
To 100.
You know, it's hard to distill down from 1,500 to about, you know, 180. But we did our best. They're going to be hard to put down. And a buddy of mine who knows a little bit about the publishing company said, Rick, if covers sell books, prepared for some good pressings. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this takes off in the way that I have envisioned it. And I have envisioned it to be pretty successful. It's just got to get out there. I mean, no one's ever seen it.
And how do people get these books?
Well, you're going to be able to order them off my website. You will be able to go to Blurb, and hopefully sometime this year they'll be available from a publisher as well. That's what I'm going to do. Once these books are published, I'm heading south. A while back when I was a youngster just starting out, I was down in L.A. and I was walking around with all my portfolios in a duffel bag, and I was lucky enough to get a little FaceTime with Sylvia White. She's been helping artists for a long, long, long time, and she's a wonderful person, and she's from Southern California, but she gave me the time of day, and I didn't know how lucky I was at the time when I walked in and was able to speak to her. But she loved some of my work, and that gave me the confidence to continue on. I don't think I would have made a second and third volume had I not got some really good feedback from her, a few other dealers in the art world. I had an agent at one time that got me very close to having this looked at by some major people in New York. So I'm not really worried about it. it would be nice to have a little recognition, a little money, but it's not going to kill me. I'm going to continue working till the day I die. And if my stuff gets discovered while I'm alive, great. If it doesn't, well, you know, it's somebody else's problem that we'll have to deal with all this stuff. I hope that people see it for what it is and, more importantly, take heed and listen to some of the things that I'm trying to say, that we need to be kinder to the planet. We need to be kinder to the life on this planet other than human life. And we need to be kind to each other. We really need to start doing it pretty soon. We're running out of time.
Well, we will make sure that people have the website address.
Roberta Smith in the New York Times said that there are not enough contributors to the greater good in this country as far as art goes. That was a major show at the MAD, the Museum of Art and Design in New York. And that's true. A lot of artists are focused on what they want to do, but I wanted to be an artist for the people. I wanted to be an artist that says stuff that people are thinking about. I wanted to represent them like some of my heroes did, Posada and Goya, and I want to be one of those guys. I want to be known for, he was one of us. He wasn't some elitist. He was an artist of the people, and that's what I want to be known as.
Well, Rick, thank you so much. This has really been an enjoyable exploration and certainly different from what we have explored most of the time before, mm-hmm. except that the creative thought process is so wonderfully repetitive in how we try to articulate it and solve it, I think.
Yeah, thank you, Rick, and I'm looking forward to the release of the books.
Thank you both for coming. It was a pleasure meeting you guys, and I want to say to the listeners that keep on supporting KCBX. I know I did. You get good shows like this, good programming, and hopefully you'll learn something. It's Aww. Been wonderful talking to both of you. It really has.
Well, thank you.
Co-host Krista Hewitt and I would like to thank this month's guest, Rick Vanini, and his wife, Kathy. To view samples of Rick's collage works, as well as the covers of the three volumes, visit his website at rrvagnini.com. The Painters Group affiliate of the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art has put out a call for entries for the upcoming Brushstrokes exhibition titled The Best of the West. This juried exhibition will run from March 20th through May 17th. Entry deadline is tomorrow, Thursday, January 15th. This exhibition is open to the residents of California, Oregon, and Washington. Visit sloma.org for more details. The offices of KCBX are located at 4100 Vachel Lane in San Luis Obispo, just off of South Higuera, near the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road. If you would like to listen to past shows of Ears on Art, or any of the shows produced and recorded here at KCBX, go to kcbx.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top. Then, click On Demand and find the show you want to listen to in the drop-down box. I am Stephen DeLuque, and you have just enjoyed listening to Ears on Art, a segment of Issues and Ideas produced at the studios of KCBX listener-supported radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Now, in our 13th year, Ears on Art is dedicated to the exploration and the advancement of the visual arts. For co-host Krista Hewitt, thank you for your time.